Fred Film Radio, Tribeca Film Festival, New York.
This is Natasha Sinyanovich for Fred Film Radio. I'm here at the Tribeca Film Festival talking to Ian Chaney, the director of The Search for General. I say so. You say tomato?
I say so. Jenny, one of our producers, says sow, but the man's original name is something more close to, and apologize to anybody who speaks Chinese, Zuo Zongtang. So Zuo, which I think is a little closer to so, but transliteration can be a fun mess. So, you know, in the Boston area where I spent much of my childhood, it was General Gao, G-A-U or G-A-O.
And oh, wow.
So some people just say General Chicken.
Right.
Just skip the...
Or General Cho or General Chow. Or...
Yeah, yeah.
And for all of our foreign listeners, General Cho, General So, So is one of the most popular dishes in Chinese restaurants here in the U.S. And the film that you've made is a documentary. It's making its world premiere here, and it's in the Spotlight section.
Yeah, Spotlight on General So's Chicken.
I like the documentary a lot, and watching it, I thought, I just moved back here from many, many years in Italy, and if you want to do a sequel, maybe I'll just riff on your idea and do In Search of Alfredo, because Alfredo pasta doesn't exist anywhere in Italy.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I've been doing a little teaching in Italy in the summertime, and nary an Alfredo. I mean, there's probably countless dishes. I would really risk kind of pigeonholing myself as just a food filmmaker if I made In Search of Alfredo. But that sounds kind of fun. Although I don't know that I could survive eating as much Alfredo as I did General So's chicken. Although General So's chicken is also not the healthiest dish. But we did eat a lot of General So's chicken while making this film. And I went through waves of being less enthusiastic about eating it, and then...
So where was, I'll ask you where the best one was, and then go a little bit into the movie itself.
The best one, and this partly was due, I think, to the experience of being there, was the General So's chicken that we ate in the restaurant of Chef C.K. Peng in Taipei, Taiwan.
Says he created it, that he is the originator of General So's chicken, which I always assumed was an American invention, and I asked myself many times, but never actually got off my bum to do what you did, which is to look into it.
That strange idea, energy to spend several years of my life looking into this. But we learned a heck of a lot along the way, much more than just a chicken story.
You go all the way back, you trace the first waves of immigration of Chinese immigrants in America, and looking at, well, two things that I had never thought about. The first was how the unbelievable, tremendous amount of racism that there was against the Chinese and the marginalization basically forced them into only to working for themselves. They weren't allowed to go into organized labor, so they opened up laundromats and restaurants.
Yeah, it became clear very quickly, very early on in working on the project that this was, that it was going to be a challenge also to make a film that was about General So's chicken and channeled the exotic quirkiness that is that dish, while also telling the really amazing and important story of the evolution of Chinese food alongside the evolution of Chinese American culture. A story that is filled with unbelievable racism and struggles that I don't think are a part of our national narrative as much as they should be. And it's ongoing. I mean, the challenges that Chinese immigrants faced in the 19th century, many of those challenges are the same ones in new forms and new iterations and new places that Chinese immigrants are facing today. So this is, it's not just a history. I mean, this is still unfolding today as people come and seek work and try to fit into a community that sees them only as a potential Chinese restaurant. Said, oh, you know, what is it? Is it that Americans imagine that in China there's just nothing but people running restaurants left and right, restaurants and laundry? I mean, it's a ludicrous idea. So the film was a journey in a way to also kind of chronicle and understand how do Americans relate to China, especially as it rises in prominence as an economic power, as a political power. How do we touch China every day? And Chinese restaurants, in many cases, are the most direct way in which white Americans, or non-Chinese Americans, I should say, interact with Chinese culture. And so it's then incredibly ironic that so many of the foods that are being served in these Chinese restaurants that we think are, you know, Chinese, oh, General So's chicken, clearly it must be some crazy Chinese dish. It's like, no, this isn't, you know, this has been Americanized. It's been made palatable so that it can sell, so that we go to the Chinese restaurants.
The other thing I mentioned that blew my mind, speaking of Americanization, was the Chicken McNugget, which right. Legend has it that you talked to the yeah. son of the man from Springfield, Missouri, I believe,
yeah.
who was the first to make cashew chicken in America.
Yeah, so there's this venture of cashew chicken in America. David Leong lives in Springfield, Missouri, and he faced some unbelievable challenges getting accepted in his community. His restaurant was bombed. People were chanting, you know, Chinese people shouldn't own a business in this town. And his narrative is that he feels like he won them over with his food, and he figured out what do people in the Midwest like eating. They love eating fried chicken with gravy. I mean, who doesn't, I guess? Well, many people do not. But he developed this dish, Springfield cashew chicken, that is basically fried chicken with a brown gravy sauce and then some cashew nuts sprinkled over it. And there's this legend. It's like a family story. We weren't really able to corroborate it, but we left it in as his story, and who knows. McDonald's.
Does explain why McDonald's started offering sweet and sour sauce.
Exactly. I mean, you know. So, yeah, the story was, oh, maybe McDonald's learned to make chicken nuggets from the makers of Springfield cashew chicken and then ran off with it. Who knows? But it is really interesting to think about fried chicken, if you'll bear with me for a second, because one of the things we saw in China was that while General Tso was busy conquering America, Colonel Sanders has been very busy conquering China. KFCs are everywhere in China. I mean, it's like Starbucks in New York City. Every city block has another KFC, which I suppose doesn't really prove anything that outrageously new, but it does seem to show that human beings, not just Americans, love fried chicken.
It does speak to the ideas in the film of a fusion. There's a woman in there who owns I believe, Mexican-Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, Chino Bandito.
Says, isn't that the whole point of right. America? That it's not really Chinese, it's not really Mexican food. It's, you know, it's something that we invented here.
Thing.
So this idea that here, more than anywhere else in the world, we don't have a culinary tradition that's very, very old. So you can basically do whatever you want here. And also the idea of globalization. That seems like a dual track in the film of what happens here when people from other places come here, when foods from other places come here, and also how the entire world is affecting everybody else now. Although I love General Tso's, and it's heavy.
Oh, yeah.
But KFC is like punishment for...
yeah.
It's like, you gave us something fried and heavy, we're going to give you something five times worse.
You think that's fried? You know, this is fried bread and chicken. I mean, so it is interesting to see how food can be kind of barometer or measure of how cultures are mingling or how much they're staking a claim for their local traditions, you know. It's been exciting to see in New York, you know, a rise in interest in Chinese cuisines from other provinces, you know. I mean, the Chinese food is incredibly diverse. It was something I knew nothing about, you know. It's like, well, there's probably a lot of General Tso's chicken, chop suey. I mean, what does an American kid grow up knowing about Chinese cuisine? So I'm hopeful that as American palates get more adventurous, that we will start to see even more adaptations and iterations of different dishes from different regions in China find their way into the States and make their way often out of New York City or out of San Francisco or LA into the countryside.
Another thing that one of the people you interviewed mentions is the idea that it doesn't matter how many people, how much Americans love Chinese food now, they're only willing to spend so much for it. And so it's expected to be cheap. It doesn't matter how many spices go into it. It doesn't matter that it's sophisticated cooking. It's not just slapping together three things. And when you think about it, to come back to the Italians, noodles, vegetables, and meat. A lot of the ingredients are the same. And yet, you know, if you want to go out for a fancy meal, you go out for Italian. If you want it to actually taste like Italian, you pay three times more for a plate of pasta with pesto.
Yeah.
Or even, an amatriciana carbonara, you know, one of these, like, sort of the poorest dishes, then you would, it's hard, you just don't think of Chinese food that way.
Yeah. There are, of course, some really wonderful high-end Chinese restaurants in New York City where the decor is amazing and the dining experience is, you know, as important as the taste of the food, and it's a night out. But absolutely, Peter Kwong, who wrote a really remarkable book called Chinese America, he points out in the film that I think the cheapness of Chinese food, as he describes it, is a reflection of kind of how Americans perceive China and Chinese culture. And I think also, though, it was a strategy for finding a niche. It was saying Chinese restaurateurs were making a case for, we're going to provide you something that's tasty, that's maybe a little exotic. We've adapted it to some extent to local tastes, and it's going to be affordable, and you're going to get a lot for your money. And that has been the niche. And so there's an expectation that comes with that. I do think that American tastes are becoming more adventurous. I believe that. And I think that will inevitably make certain folks willing to spend a little bit more to have a little bit more of an adventure with what they're eating. And I think food can be an interesting ambassador. It can be a gateway to knowing more and learning more about another culture. I'm sure there are a number of people that we interviewed who said, yeah, food was my way into China. It was what got me fascinated in Chinese culture, and, you know, now they live and work there. I never set out to be like a food filmmaker, you know. I didn't have a particularly interesting or elaborate relationship to food when I was a kid. But I do think it's a really powerful window onto the way people interact with each other and is a really powerful ambassador of cultures.
Well, as someone who has a very strong relationship with food, my eating disorder is that if it's on the table, I have to finish it. I appreciate your film, and I appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Ian Chaney, the director of The Search for General Tso, which made its world premiere here in Tribeca in the Spotlight section. And you're listening to Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.